I'll discuss about an overview the work on asymptotic safety and how it helps in construct a simple theory. By simple here, I mean theories where we just deal with the degrees of freedom that we know exist, and we don't make hypotheses about the existence of many more structures. I'm going to, as you see up here, I'm going to give a brief introduction on asymptotic safety, and then I'll talk about applications to gravity, particle physics and gravity. So by way of introduction, you've seen in the first slide of Chris's talk this morning that when you have fixed points, they lead to predictions. And in his case, if there is a fixed point that you reach in the infrared, and if your RG runs long enough and you come close to it, obviously the couplings attain a value, which is the value at the fixed point, which is something that you can calculate. So that gives you predictions. Infrared attractive directions at a fixed point give you a prediction. But there's also another way in which you can use fixed point to give you predictions, and that's if you reach a fixed point not in the ultraviolet, but in, sorry, not in the infrared, but in the ultraviolet. And again, if you assume that your trajectory goes to an ultraviolet fixed point, then necessarily it must lie, it must come out of that fixed point in a relevant direction, which means ultraviolet attractive or infrared repulsive. Generically, fixed points have only a finite number of relevant directions, and therefore all the other parameters near the fixed point are fixed. And then you can extrapolate that to lower energies, and you get predictions really at any energy. So the trajectories that reach a fixed point in the ultraviolet are called renormalizable trajectories, or ultraviolet safe. And those represent ultraviolet complete theories. So the asymptotic safety is basically about constructing ultraviolet complete theories, but really it is not ultraviolet completion that we seek per se, because that's not something that we will be able to test, but it's the predictivity that they have that is attractive. It's an interesting feature. So we use this now as a criterion to select theories. This I've already said, basically. So relevant directions are the ones that are attracted to a fixed point in the ultraviolet and repelled by the fixed point in the infrared, and vice versa. And every irrelevant direction leads to a prediction, and that's true both if you reach the fixed point in the infrared and if you reach it in the ultraviolet. All right, so the general picture is here. So if P is a fixed point, and let's say U1, U2 are relevant direction, and U3 is irrelevant, then you have here a couple of RG trajectories. The arrows go from the ultraviolet to the infrared. This SUV is called the ultraviolet critical surface, and its tangent space at the fixed point is the space spanned by these relevant directions. So if now we follow the flow in the inverse direction from the infrared to the ultraviolet, and you ask what do I need to impose on the initial point in order to reach the fixed point in the ultraviolet? Well, if you start in this surface, then you will reach the fixed point. This represents an ultraviolet complete theory. If you start a little bit off the critical surface, initially you will follow closely this renormalizable trajectory. Then you arrive here. The flow slows down here because the beta functions are small, but then eventually you are repelled in the direction of some irrelevant operator, and typically you will be pushed to infinity. So this theory, this trajectory represents an effective field theory, and the energy at which you start this trajectory blows up is the energy where the effective field theory breaks down. So the closer you started from this critical surface, the higher the energy at which the effective field theory breaks down. So that's the general picture. And well, let me skip this. Let me discuss mechanisms, like some examples and mechanisms that generate fixed points. So I should say that asymptotically free theories are special cases of asymptotically safe theories, where the fixed point is just the free theory. And in that case, the counting whether what are relevant and irrelevant simply coincides with the canonical counting of dimensions. So the relevant couplings are simply the ones that have a positive mass dimension, and irrelevant those that have a negative mass dimension. So now, most interesting are so asymptotically safe but not free examples. So, for example, in three dimensions, or between two and four dimensions, you can consider nonlinear sigma models that have generically this Lagrangian, where H is a metric in the target space, and G square is some coupling with dimension of mass to the 2 minus 3 over 2. So these theories are non-renormalizable in dimension greater than 2. And the beta function of this theory is given by the flow of 1 over G times the metric. You can, if you expand the metric in Taylor series, it gives you infinitely many couplings, and you can study the flow of the whole set of couplings in this way. And this has a flow that is governed by the Ricci tensor. So exactly in two dimensions, this is the well-known Ricci flow, but something similar happens also in higher dimensions. So now you can specialize the model by choosing the metric. So here, this is a bit, this is still a very complicated system because you have a full metric flowing, but let's suppose that we impose a rotation symmetry. Then this metric is just a metric of the round sphere, and it only has one free parameter, which is the radius. So the flow of G is basically the flow of the radius of the sphere. And the flow of G is written here in two dimensions. And the theory is asymptotically free in particular, if there is more than, if n is greater than 2. Then you go to a little bit beyond two dimensions, and the coupling here then acquires some dimension. It becomes dimensionful. And and the beta function of the dimensionless coupling, G tilde, which is G squared times k to the d minus 2, it has two terms now, one that comes from the classical running, which is from this term, and this term comes from the loop. And it's the same as you have in two dimensions. So you see that this has now a non-Gaussian fixed point here, which is checked for, confirmed by Monte Carlo calculation, for example, in d equal to 3. So this is a non-trivial fixed point that you could use to reach, that you could reach both in the infrared or in the ultraviolet and make predictions accordingly. Now, a beautiful example in the context of theories that resemble the standard model was found a few years ago, and it concerns Gage-Yukawa theories. If you consider gauge theories with fermions, well, the beta function at one loop has this coefficient, which is positive if this parameter epsilon is positive. So you have asymptotic freedom then. And if you go to two loops, there's an additional term that goes like alpha cube. And depending on the signs of B and C, you can have various situations. the interesting situations would be, well, here you would have some non-trivial fixed point at negative alpha, which is unphysical, but you would have fixed points for positive alpha in these two cases. And then you can ask, what is actually the value of C? And this was calculated long ago, 1974, and it's positive. And therefore, in gauge theories coupled to fermions, the only non-trivial fixed point that you can have is this one, and it's infrared attractive. You see, it has this positive slope. And for a long time, this was all, and nobody looked further. But if you now consider coupling these fermions also to a scalar by means of some Yukawa term, or you introduce these additional terms, and you can then study the beta functions for the gauge and for the Yukawa coupling. And they are written here at two loops. So here are the term that you had before, the alpha third epsilon, the 25, proportional to alpha g, but then there's also this term now proportional to the Yukawa term, coupling. And you see that it comes with a minus sign, and this can give rise to new phenomena. And indeed, now you have two possibilities. If epsilon is positive, so if you are below the threshold for where you lose asymptotic freedom, you have this Banks-Zucks fixed point that I have shown before. But if you go to epsilon positive, just above where you lose asymptotic freedom, you have instead this non-trivial fixed point, both for G and for Y, which this formula is written here. And the nice thing is that the reason why I called this parameter epsilon is that you can, by taking NF and NC very large, you can make this number as small as you wish, and then you are in the domain where perturbation theory is valid. And so this fixed point that you found here is within the domain of perturbation theory, and so it can be, its existence is something that can be established rigorously in this limit in which NC and NF become large. So this is a very nice example within the standard class of theories that we consider in particle physics. And here I've shown the flow around it. So this is the Gaussian fixed point, and this is this Litin-Sannino fixed point, which has one relevant and one irrelevant direction.
It looked like it was the ratio of NC over NF that you wanted to be small. Is that
minus 11 over 2, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So what does the strong irrelevant flow to? Flow to chiral-symmetric integration or something like that? Or?
Here you flow to strong coupling, yeah.
Strong coupling.
Yeah, it blows up, basically.
Strong Yukawa coupling.
This is a gauge and this is Yukawa. Both become strong, yeah. All right, so the very name asymptotic safety was originally invented it was thought of as something to be applied to the case of gravity by Weinberg. And now the beta functions for gravity had also been studied long ago, in particular in the case when you have high derivative terms. These are dimensionless couplings whose flow has been studied by various authors, but the first correct result, I think, is due to Avramidi and Barvinsky in 1985. And the beta functions here, the beta of lambda, she has this negative coefficient. So lambda is the overall coefficient of the curvature square terms. And this omega and theta measure the ratio of the between these term and the Weyl square. E is the Euler term, or Gauss-Bonnet. It's a topological invariant. So you need only think of these two terms. And so this theory is asymptotically free, and beta and omega also has some fixed point value in particular.
All right. Now the problem why this theory, well, this theory is renormalizable and asymptotically free, so in that sense it's very much like QCD, and the reason why it was never accepted as a quantum theory for gravity is that it has ghosts, and so that problem is still open, but there's people recently that claim that can get around that problem. Now, another possibility is that instead of reaching the zero fixed point, the free fixed point, as I just said, is that gravity reaches a non-trivial fixed point. So that means that we have to take into account the running not just of the dimensionless couplings, but also the dimensionful ones. And for example, you can think of you start from the Einstein-Hilbert term. Oh, perhaps I should say, going back to what I said earlier, the one point that I should have mentioned is this. In the case of the nonlinear sigma model, you see, the fixed point comes from the balancing these two terms. This was the classical term, and this is the one loop term. In the case of the Lithium-Sannino fixed point, it comes from balancing one and two loop terms. So it's a one loop higher. You always have to have different loop contributions that somehow conspire to give you a zero. And in the case of gravity, the mechanism is very, very, very similar to the case of the nonlinear sigma model, because you have here a coupling that in four dimensions has dimension of mass squared. So its running typically will be quadratic. This means that the beta function of G goes like G square K square. Then you define a dimensionless Newton coupling, which is Newton coupling times the Kartoff square. And it has a beta function that looks like that. So it starts up near the origin in a positive direction, and then the loop term bends it downwards. So this gives a UV attractive fixed point for G. If you also take into account the cosmological term, this is the flow, and this is the picture of the flow with the Gaussian fixed point and the non-Gaussian fixed point. What I just showed were one-loop calculations, and you may say, well, I don't trust one-loop calculation because my coupling comes out to be close to one. So a lot of work has been done using not perturbative calculations, but this functional renormalization group method, which is, to begin with, a non-perturbative statement, and then it has to be approximated in various ways in order to extract some results. So this was first done by Martin Reuter, and then it has been extended to many, many truncations by other people. So for example, if you reconsider the curvature square terms, you will have cosmological term, Einstein term, and the high derivative ones. And so in this case, you still find the asymptotically free fixed point for the two couplings, but there is also a non-trivial fixed point for those two couplings, if you take...
For the nonlinear sigma model case, we can do, in principle, one can do 2 plus epsilon expansion. So here, for gravity, can you do something similar?
Yeah, this was the first thing that people tried, the epsilon expansion for gravity. And it works as in the nonlinear sigma model.
It's also 2 plus epsilon or something?
The theory is asymptotically free. So Newton coupling is asymptotically free in two dimensions. It's dimensionless and asymptotically free. Then you go a little above, and it develops this non-trivial fixed point. Then people studied other things like F of R, and this has now been pushed up to polynomials of order 70 or R plus C cube terms. This is a difficult one. And this is relevant because it's the term that makes gravity non-renormalizable at two loops. There are also, since this functional renormalization group method allows you to study the flow of whole functions, not just individual couplings, you can apply this and find a non-trivial fixed point that are functional. So the whole function f of r has some fixed point. And then also other truncations. So,
and for example, for the case where they look at polynomials up to order 70, is there any evidence that it's converging to the same fixed point as you include more and more?
So yeah, these polynomial, these f of r polynomials, they work very nicely. You go up with the order of the polynomial, and the first couplings, you see that after a few fluctuations, initial fluctuations, they stabilize. So it's this is one of the things that really work best in this with this method. You can also do something completely different. You can study a vertex expansion. So you expand the effective action around some background, and you consider just the first few powers in the fluctuation. And then the functional renormalization group equation will give you the gamma dot. And when you expand it, this gives you the RG for all these vertex functions. And you can read the beta functions from these from this flow. Now, this is work that you can do around flat space. And it's been developed especially by people in Heidelberg. The problem, there's a problem that with the whole technique here is that when you the initial action that you put in is a function of a metric, and you expand around the background, and the action therefore is invariant under if you shift the background by epsilon and the fluctuation by minus epsilon. So, however, by the way in which you calculate, in which you introduce a cutoff in this functional integral, necessarily you break this split symmetry, and the result is that the derivatives of this effective action with respect to h and g bar are different. And so, for example, if you consider the Hilbert action and you expand it in powers of h of h, it has here a 1 over 16 pi g in front, which is common to all these terms. But if you calculate the beta function of each of these Newton coupling will not be the same due to the violation of this split symmetry. The best way to deal with this would be to calculate, write the anomalous word identities for this split symmetry and solve it, and then rewrite this the flow, not for the function of two metrics, but or a metric and a fluctuation, but for just one variable, which where you have eliminated one of the two by means of these word identities. Unfortunately, this program could only be carried through for the very simplest example, which is where this this shift is of this form, a constant times g bar. Then the word identity can be solved, but in more general cases it cannot. So for the time being, we just rely on the observation that the results seem not to be too divergent, even though they don't give the same result always, because there are different calculations will give you different results, but they seem not to be too different. So there is some sort of consistency in what we see. All right, I want to now say a couple of things about this beyond standard model. theories. So in the wake of this lithium Sannino discovery, there were several attempts to apply it to to particle physics. And so the question is whether there exists some phenomenologically viable asymptotically safe Ijikawa theories. So in the original model, you have to take the limit where NF and NC are large. That's in order to have the theory in perturbative control. But presumably, there will be models where this property is still true, even at finite NF and NC. So there's been several work where people look for conditions in order to achieve fixed points in these models. The simplest models just use additional fermions that are coupled by vector currents to the gauge fields. So the class of models that we had consider have the gauge group of the standard model. So, and of course, the standard model fermions are present, but then there are, in addition, some new fermions that are coupled by these vector currents to the to this gauge fields, and they are coupled also by Yukawa couplings to some to an additional scalar S. So, in addition to you have standard model Lagrangian plus terms like these, and so then you try to look for representation for these fermions that produce good fixed points and viable physics. And so you can change the, you can couple these fermions to the SU3 to color. So you have some representation labels here for color, some representation label for SU2 and hypercharge. And so this is the list of couplings that one can flow. So for example, here's a model that looks promising at one loop. It is a doublet of SU2. It has this hypercharge and it's a singlet of color. And take three copies of this. And then you find a fixed point that has all these values here for the couplings, which seem reasonable. And in the second line here, you see the scaling exponents at that fixed point. So it tells you that.
Alpha T is the top quark you call?
Excuse me?
Alpha T is the top quark you call?
Yeah.
And what is alpha Y?
Alpha 1 is the...
Alpha Y.
Last one. Last.
Yeah, so 1, 2, 3 are the gauge couplings. This is the top. Y is the Yukawa coupling of the new fermions. So this seems reasonable. The one thing that should worry you is this exponent 33, which is large, because here we started from just from dimensionless coupling. And so it means that the quantum effects have changed the scaling of your operators by a very large amount. So that should ring a bell. And in fact, so you should you have to impose some criteria in order to be sure that this fixed point is really there and it's not an artifact of having used just a one loop approximation. So you ask yourself, if I go to two loops, will the fixed point still be there? And so you demand that the coupling should not be too large and the scaling exponents should not be too large. And then at the fixed point, the beta function is zero. And the beta function comes from the contribution, as we saw, of 1, 2, and perhaps 3 loops terms. And so you will, if perturbation theory is to be trusted, you would expect that the two loop contribution is smaller than the one loop, and the three loop contribution should be smaller than the two loop. So these are reasonable things to expect. So then you just recalculate the beta function at higher loops. And for the gauge fields, you could go up to 3 loops. And you ask, do we still see those fixed points? And what we see is that by spanning a large number of models where this hypercharge goes from 0 to 10, the models are either singlet, the vectors are either singlet, triplets, or octets of SU3, and they go from isospin 1/2 to isospin 10. So there's a rather large number of models, and then you find all the fixed points, and then you run through those tests to see if they persist at high loops. And the bottom line of this search is that many models give promising fixed points at two loops in the gauge couplings, but fail when you consider the three-loop effect in the gauge couplings. And there are some which you can say probably are really true fixed points because they persist with similar properties when, as you go up with the loops. But although all of those have this U1 triviality problem, namely alpha 1 is 0 and it's stuck there. So you cannot have a non-trivial alpha 1 at low energy. So clearly they are not physical. So more recent work on this, therefore, has focused on not standard model gauge groups in order to solve the U1 triviality problem. For example, you can embed standard model into Patisalam, and that gets rid of the Landau pole in the U1 gauge coupling. And these models use resummations for large NF. Here's a few references. But you see, you need large number of flavor in order to achieve that. So this goes beyond what we consider to be simple. And so I will not talk about those anymore. I will say a few more things about models of particle physics coupled to gravity. This is because it's been observed that gravity modifies the beta functions of matter couplings by certain flavor-independent terms. And these can give rise to non-trivial fixed points. You see, we don't have much data about quantum gravity, but we know enough about particle physics. And so it is possible that restrictions on quantum gravity come from demanding that it is compatible with what we know about particle physics. So if there is a fixed point for gravity, it may give rise also to ultraviolet fixed points in the matter sectors.
Sorry, can you say a few words about how this calculation is done? So gravity is taken as a background field, or?
No, you have to take gravity to be dynamical. So there's loops, graviton loops, yes?
Graviton loops.
Yeah. You can start doing this in the effective field theory of gravity at low energy. The first calculations of, for example, for gauge couplings, this was calculated by Wilczek and Robinson some 10 years ago. And then you can do similar calculations for scalar couplings and Yukawa couplings and so on. And typically you tend to, you'll see the form of the modifications. So, for example, in the case of scalar field, suppose you have a scalar potential. You have the beta function of the quartic coupling is modified by a term proportional to lambda 4 and to what I called g tilde earlier. G tilde is a dimensionless Newton constant. And then you can ask, is this positive or negative? If it's negative, you get a non-trivial fixed point. Calculation shows that if it's positive, you don't get a non-trivial fixed point. In fact, this tells you that lambda 4 is irrelevant, so it must be stuck at 0. And the type of flow then you... However, note that this term here is present only in the fixed point regime where g tilde becomes constant. If you, as you go below the Planck scale, this number g tilde very quickly, by power law, it goes to 0. And therefore, then this term becomes immediately unimportant when you go below the Planck scale. So the flow then for lambda, taking into account this correction, it has lambda of poles if you are too high or too low, and there's exactly one trajectory where it goes to the where it's asymptotically free. And so if this critical trajectory, it starts at lambda equal to zero, and it remains zero all the way to the Planck scale. And here, that term goes to zero, and you just have the standard model running, which brings its value close to the to what we observe. And this was the origin of this rather striking prediction by Shaposhnikov and Vetterich, which was done well before the discovery of the Higgs particle, and the mass that they predicted is actually quite close to the observed one. And somewhat similar mechanism was invoked by Eichhorn and Held more recently in order to give a calculation of the Topiokawa coupling and the top mass. So again, you can, in this case, as we shall see in a moment, there is a non-trivial fixed point for the Yukawa, and then there are trajectories that either go, if you are, there are trajectories that are attracted to the free fixed point, so they are asymptotically free. There's one critical trajectory that goes to this non-trivial fixed point, and then there are these other trajectories which hit Landau poles. And this predictive trajectory seems to be give a rather good value for the Yukawa. This is what...
Just, you know, something very disturbing about this picture is you're talking about scales way above time.
Yeah, and if I go...
Perturbation theory surely is completely meaningless.
Why perturbation theory?
Gravity.
Well, you see, once you reach the Planck scale, everything gets frozen. It doesn't get stronger than that.
Well, that's just a hypothesis.
Yeah. That's what asymptotic safety is about. It says the strength of the interaction doesn't get stronger once you get a certain regime.
I know, but you have to put that in my hand.
Well, no. Well, there's calculations that tell you that there is such a fixed point. Then,
in gravity.
Yeah.
And you trust those calculations up to 10 to the 76 GeV.
Well, if you trust them a little bit above Planck scale, then you trust them forever because it won't get worse. But yeah, I understand your concern. Anyway, just to let me just, since time is running out, let me just show you something more recent where we tried to extend this calculation by Astrid into a more complete standard model. So here's the running of the gauge couplings, one loop with this correction. And this is running of the Yukawa couplings, which these Ys are matrices, 3 by 3 in the standard model. And again, we put in these corrections that come from gravity. And
is there a typo? Maybe the bottom one should be beta.
Sorry?
Should the bottom one be beta of u sub d?
Beta of u, this is beta of d. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is a misprint, yes. Yeah. So here, since there are uncertainties in the calculation of these f, we just treat them as free parameters, and we look what happens by changing those parameters. So one point that I didn't mention is that you have to, when you look for a fixed point, you have to look for fixed points only for the physical parameters. In the theory, generally, there are some couplings that you can eliminate by field redefinitions. Those are called redundant couplings. And they don't need to reach a fixed point. And so here you have to also eliminate the redundant couplings. And that's what amounts to basically diagonalizing these interaction matrices. And then you arrive at a smaller set of couplings, which are the diagonal elements of these diagonal U-covers and the CKM matrix. And then you can run the beta functions just for these and for the CKM matrix. And it turns out that the gravitational corrections affect the running of these diagonal terms, but they don't affect the running of the CKM matrix. So this is unaffected by gravity. So notice that the running of this matrix has these poles when the U-covers become degenerate. So this calculation is valid under the assumption that all the U-covers are different, which is true in the real world. And so we limit ourselves to that domain. And I'll just skip this two-generation thing, but in three generations, you can reparameterize the CKM matrix with these four parameters, whose beta functions I don't write because they are rather horrid. But they have fixed points for these particular matrices that correspond to what in particle physics one would call no mixing. However, so here's the simplest CKM matrix, just the identity. And the other ones correspond to just permuting the different quarks. So you have each of the up-type quarks interacting with the different combinations of the down-type quarks. And these are all fixed points. And then you can look for solutions for zeros for the betas of the U-covers, keeping these CKM matrices fixed. So there are large number of solutions, and by various criteria you can rule them, almost all of them, out. But there's one realistic trajectory that one can construct, which is shown here for the gauge couplings, and here for the U-cover couplings, and this is the running of the CKM element. So you start, this flow starts from this CKM matrix in the ultraviolet, and it flows down to this one in the infrared. And this is, these are just the numbers. These are the numbers at the fixed point of the various couplings. And these are the values that you achieve in the infrared for the masses. Here we've rewritten the U-covers in terms of masses. So it's not very precise, but more or less it fits everything that we know about this sector. So this was just for quarks, but you can do something similar also for lepton mixing. All right, so...
Is it possible that higher loop RG...
Oh.
We'll fix those errors?
The bulk of the calculations we do at one loop because we just want to see the effect of gravity, first of all. But then we also have the two loop beta functions. And once we see something interesting, we test it at two loops. So these numbers don't change, or they change very, very little if you go to two loops. So I think this is a rather reliable calculation.
So may I ask, what really is the role of gravity here? It's just to have the asymptotic safety fixed point.
Yeah.
And then there all the flow. The graviton loops don't really contribute, do they? Far below
the graviton loops are only supposed to generate those terms that I wrote here. These constant terms, these linear terms in the beta functions. And once you arrive below the Planck scale, they become zero.
They become zero.
Immediately. Yeah.
So it's basically just flowing the standard model from there.
Yeah. All right, so here are my conclusions with strengths and weaknesses for asymptotic safety. You see, it's... So we try to use just the degrees of freedom that we know, and we have many tools at our disposal. It's a bottom-up approach in the sense that you start from the effective field theory description and you try to reach some ultraviolet fixed point. And that means that if if you find an UV complete trajectory, then the theory is almost guaranteed to have the correct infrared limit. This, in the case of gravity, is particularly important. And it's as predictive as a standard model, if not more. But of course, the prices you pay is that the fixed point action, in particular in the case of gravity, is very complicated. The simplest application to BSM don't seem to work, and there are still rather large theoretical uncertainties. So that in order to calculate something physical, a lot more work will be needed. Thank you.
Okay. We have time, just one very urgent question.
Very short question about this Higgs mass prediction. So back then, the window for the allowed Higgs mass was already quite narrow. So I was wondering, like, how much one could trust the prediction that was done for the measurement. I mean, what kind of errors and assumptions went into that?
I think that the error bar was not very large, because the main assumption is just that the lambda is zero at the Planck scale, basically. And then it's a standard model running, which is well known.
Well,
good.
I'm sure this will arouse much more discussion. Well, it's important to think precisely what went in your calculations of all these congestion dynamics, which sounds very interesting and promising.
Mm-hmm.
And to see what went
in the calculation of the beta functions.
Yes.
Oh, that's
No. These values which seem to be impressively close to observations. A few slides back.
This.
Closes.
Yeah. So you have to fix you have a fixed point, and you just have to start the flow somewhere near the fixed point in some relevant direction. So this is what gives the restrictions in the end. I should say that of all these numbers, there's only one genuine prediction, because for example, up, down, strange, and charm are asymptotically free in this calculation. You can see that they go down here. They are asymptotically free, and their value cannot be predicted. So you just fix, you just adjust the values in the ultraviolet so that you find the correct values in the infrared. So you don't have that many. And then the bottom value was fixed by adjusting the value of that coupling Fy that we treated as a free parameter. And then the only prediction that you have is the M top.
Obviously. But even so, it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And if you still have to eat some lunch. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For